The following teleclass was broadcast live from the CHICA Canada Conference in Toronto on May 30th, 2011, Benchmark and Performance Measurement. The broadcast was sponsored by Gojo Industries, Inc.
There will be two speakers involved. Zakir is an advanced practice nurse in infection prevention and control at the Bridgepoint Hospital in Toronto. He graduated from nursing at McMaster University and worked as an RN at the Hospital for Sick Children. He received his MHSC in Community Health and Epidemiology from the University of Toronto while working at the University Health Network as an infection control practitioner. He recently became an advanced practice nurse specializing in infection prevention and control. He is the scientific chair of this conference. He is also a CHICA Canada representative of the ARO Point Prevalence Study Group and recently became a facilitator with the Canadian Patient Safety Institute for the Patient Safety Education Program. And the other presenter is Leslie Forster, who holds a position as a manager of surveillance and performance measurement in quality and patient safety in the Vancouver Coastal Health Authority at the Powell River General Hospital site in Powell River, British Columbia. She has been working as an epidemiologist in an area of surveillance for over 10 years. While employed at the Public Health Agency of Canada, she was involved in national surveillance and was involved in provincial programs while with the BC Centre for Disease Control. She has worked with the Vancouver Coastal Health for the past 5 years. The Quality and Patient Safety Department oversees both infection control and patient safety for the region. Welcome, Zakir.
Welcome this afternoon also to all of the folks that are on the Weber teleclass. Although they aren't able to see us, they are able to hear us. So thank you to all of you for coming, one, to the conference, two, I hope you get a great chance to see Toronto. If you haven't been here before, but thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Like Patsy had said, there's been a lot of work that's gone into this, and the group's really tried to struggle with making sure that we do something that really hits your needs. So hopefully the variety of topics that we've got will do at least some of that for you, if not all of it. Patsy, you kind of scared me. You had my name a lot in your presentation. So hopefully it'll have some benefit for you. So Canadian healthcare organizations over the last 20 years have really been increasingly challenged to be able to measure and report their data. The demand for accountability, both from outside organizations as well as the public, continues to grow. And healthcare organizations just can't say anymore intuitively that they think that they provide quality services and quality care. We now have to be able to demonstrate that what we're doing are safe, effective, efficient procedures. And some of the ways that people have been able to start doing that are by using balanced scorecards or report cards, finding ways to be able to report the information both to educated members of the public as well as the public at large. And so performance measures that are usually set up by governing bodies or senior administration often will give you a good perspective on how the organization is doing, but more and more so, we're starting to find that safety indicators are being included in there. And with that, it's often been an infection control indicator like hand hygiene or healthcare-associated MRSA. And so measurement is quite fundamental to be able to understand and improve quality of care. And in fact, it's sometimes an aspect of an organization that provides quality of care that they actually do performance measurement or benchmarking. And healthcare organizations collect a ton. We know we've got a plethora of data. Often that encompasses things that we do for public reporting or for monitoring or to be able to report on quality services. But to be able to have transformative advances in healthcare, we have to be able to measure and be able to compare to see how well we're doing. And measuring implies that you're using some sort of process, be it outcome measures or process measures, to be able to compare against to some sort of target or goal. And so the goal of this presentation is really to be able to give you a sense of what benchmarking is, its potential, the advantages and some of the disadvantages related to being able to benchmark, a little bit on the process, as well as Leslie's going to come up and give you, really spend some time around an example to give you an illustrative view of how being able to measure and do performance measurement and benchmarking really does impact on your improvement or your quality of care. Now, I know someone's going to tell me at the end, what is benchmarking? Don't use a definition from Wikipedia. But Wikipedia actually had a pretty good definition, which was the process of comparing one's business and practices and performance metrics to best practices from other industries. Pretty simple, but it's comparing yourself to people that are quite well-known or who have identified themselves as being one of the leaders in the area of whatever it is that you want to compare for. Dimensions often include things like cost, quality, and time. And if you didn't know, benchmarking actually came from cobblers. The cobblers used to use, or where benchmarking came from, was cobblers would get people to put their feet on benches and then draw out how their feet looked, or mark on the bench how their feet looked, to be able to actually develop the shoes. Interesting that we took it from them and not from some other group, but a key component for our improvement process is using the data to monitor whether the improvement is actually having an effect and whether there's been a change. Benchmarking is an important process in using data to set improvement goals or targets. In order for an indicator to be meaningful for senior management, in order for indicator data to be meaningful at senior levels, the data should be used to both interpret as well as determine whether we're doing better. And it shouldn't just be a numerical target. A benchmark is often the top result from an organization. And what you truly want to be able to do to understand whether you can compare to that organization is understand all the layers and steps that got them to be that benchmark. Often, by setting arbitrary targets or by setting something that's achievable, you can actually end up demoralizing your staff by setting yourself at a target that you can't reach. So even though you're going to pick an organization that you want to target to, what you want to be able to do is also use some of your historical data and some of your performance data to be able to determine what your target is that you want to meet. So you would identify an organization that you want to benchmark against. But you wouldn't just say, okay, they've got zero HAIs, and since we've got 50 in a year, we're going to attempt to get to zero. But you would try and use that target with your historical data and your context to be able to figure out targets for yourself. You may eventually try to achieve that zero that organization's got, but it's probably not going to be the first thing that you attempt to do. There's a number of different kinds of benchmarking, and for this presentation, we're going to go through four. Performance benchmarking, process benchmarking, internal and external. Performance benchmarking, similar to outcome measuring, is you're often trying to identify a performance that needs a bit of change. But the process benchmarking allows you to be able to look at the individual steps that's able to facilitate that change. Internal benchmarking is often when you identify something within your organization that you're going to compare against. So if you're on a medicine unit, you may decide to compare against another medical unit. If you're in an ICU and you're part of a healthcare corporation, you may decide that you're going to compare to an ICU of another facility within your organization. But it's often what you would identify as comparing to an internal process or into an internal group within your organization. External, obviously, is looking at data and analyzing data from organizations or from other organizations or from outside of your facility. But it's often an organization that's already been identified as doing well in that process. You can scream them out, but what do people think would be some of the advantages of using an internal benchmark? Absolutely, Absolutely. So you wouldn't be necessarily, if I can use other words, the hospital context is basically going to be the same. So the factors within the hospital aren't going to change. So that's one great reason to be able to compare internally. You don't have to worry about trying to make sure that the organization is similar. All of those factors are going to be relatively the same. Other advantages to doing internal benchmarking? Yes. Absolutely. If you introduce process changes, you'd be clear about what the impact is going to be. Absolutely. Other advantages? Yes. Yes. Absolutely. So your definitions are more likely to be the same. You're probably going to be using the same MRSA definition or CDIF definition within the organization. You're probably going to use the same DAP definition between the two ICUs. Hopefully you get the surgeons to agree on that, though. I mean, the intensivists. Some of the other things are it's often easier to do. It's often easier to get sensitive information because you're already in the hospital system. You've already signed confidentiality agreements. You're allowed to be able to go into the different charts of the patients. And it's often easier to get the story behind the numbers. But some of the pitfalls, any disadvantages of using an internal benchmark? Yes. Absolutely. So other areas may be having the same problems that you're having, and you're only comparing against someone that's probably not cutting edge or may not actually be a best practice or a best performance. So even though it's easier, you may not actually be comparing to a better benchmark. Absolutely. You might become complacent. It can potentially lead to a lack of innovation because you're not picking out new things from new people who see things in a different way than you do. So we hit all of the ones for internal. What about some advantages for external benchmarking? Anybody? Absolutely. So what it does is allow you to be able to potentially identify organizations that are at cutting edge. And so you're looking outside of yourselves to other people that are potentially doing new, innovative things, things that might be different, things that you didn't even think about. The other reason to be able to do external benchmarking is if you do it up front, you can often identify an organization that as you move forward, you'll be able to benchmark against on a regular basis. Because what you do is identify an organization that you're similar to. So you would have done all the work up front to be able to identify that that was an organization that you were similar to and you would want to compare to, but I've just given you a disadvantage. It also takes a ton of time to be able to go through and make sure that you're doing the same methodology, you have the same patients, that the results are really transferable between those two organizations. Often it's difficult to get access to sensitive information, or it takes time to get people to agree that you're going to be able to share information when you're doing an external benchmark. And you do need to be careful that you look at both national and international differences. So when you start to go outside of the country, that in fact the benchmarks are something that you want to compare against. If organizations aren't similar to you, there's no reason to benchmark against them. So one of the examples that I've heard over many, many years is we can't compare to CNSP data. Does everybody know what CNSP is? The Canadian Nosocomial Infection Surveillance Program. It's a great organization that's collecting a lot of data, and many of us have been able to use that data. But there has been the argument from areas outside of acute care or that aren't a teaching facility that I can't compare against to it because it's not a similar population. It has ICUs, it has surgeries, it has emergencies, it has tertiary patients that I just don't see. And so it's often difficult to be able to compare against that kind of benchmark. That would be our national benchmark that we would try and use. But if you can't see your population in that group, then it's often difficult to say that you want to benchmark against them. And then if you do benchmark against them and you're lower or you're higher, you don't know why. It's difficult to figure out what the pieces are. Some of the other difficulties with some of the international benchmarks is it's difficult to figure out how they got that benchmark. So even though you want to be able to compare your SSI rates to an organization like NIS, if you're higher or lower, you don't necessarily know which of those organizations that are doing really well. Who do I actually need to figure out? What are my processes so I can compare against their processes and try and figure out if there's little bits and pieces that I actually need to change? All you've got is the outcome number to be able to compare against. That's the end for me. And I actually get to move and hand it over to Leslie. And Leslie's actually going to take us through an example that Patsy introduced. And it's quite, for us as we discussed it, it was something that went, light bulb goes off. That was a really easy thing to do. So I'm going to hand it over to Leslie, and she's going to walk us through an illustrative example about using performance benchmark for improvement. Thank you.
Do you want this one? So as Zahir mentioned, I'm going to be taking you through an example to illustrate, you know, how we move from, you know, the theory behind benchmarking and the information that Zahir shared with us to actually doing that in practice. So the example that we chose as a group to work on today is catheter-associated urinary tract infections. And the reason why we selected that particular example is because, you know, most of you who either work in a long-term care facility or in an acute care are familiar with the catheter-associated UTIs. And in this case, the population of interest for our example will be patients in an acute care setting on a medical surgical unit. So here is an example. Here's our sample example. And so this is this graph shows quarterly rates for our facility. We'll call it our facility. And you'll see here that on the bottom half, on your vertical, or sorry, your horizontal axis, we have time. And time here is presented in terms of quarters. And so the rates are essentially quarterly rates. And we have rates there presented for the years 2009 and up to quarter three of 2010. And on the vertical axis, we have our rate of catheter-associated urinary tract infections. And just to review, in order to arrive at our rate, in this case it's a rate per 1,000 catheter days, we take the total number of catheter-associated urinary tract infections for our given time period in question, which in this case is a quarter, and we divide that by the total number of catheter days for the same time period in question, and we multiply that by 1,000, and that's how we achieve a calculation for a rate. So now I'd like to take a look at this graph. And so let's assume that you are the infection control practitioner for this particular facility, and this is all of the data that you have. You do not have any more historical data. This is what you have. And so you're looking at this, and you are getting a little bit concerned because you see that over time, although there's been a little bit of a dip in your rates, that over time there has been a steady increase in your rate of catheter-associated urinary tract infections for this patient population. And so what should you do? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to take you through the process, the process of looking at benchmarking. And so essentially what we're going to be doing is looking at benchmarking our performance. And so earlier, Zahir reviewed the types of benchmarking, namely performance benchmarking and also process benchmarking. And you will recall that the objective of the performance benchmark is really to determine where our performance is in relation to another facility that is like yourself. So for example, we are going to, for our example, we're going to look externally, and we're going to go to look at the NHSN. And essentially what we want to be able to do is we want to look at, you know, because we are concerned, we want to know whether or not we have reason to be concerned. And then if there is a gap in our performance, we want to look at how we can perhaps set a target and move towards improving our performance. So how do you go about identifying an appropriate benchmark? So on this slide, you'll see that there are a number of key questions that you need to ask yourself. And as Zahir mentioned earlier, you may work within a network of organizations, and so perhaps there is another facility that that is doing well within your network of colleagues that you could look at, or you may have to look externally. But whichever one you choose to do, you're going to have to look at asking yourself some basic questions. And Zahir has covered several of these. So first of all, and probably most importantly, we want to make sure that our definitions are consistent. So do you have the same definitions for both your numerator, in this case your catheter-associated UTIs, and your denominator? Are you counting catheter days in the same way? This is important. Does the potential benchmarking partner have, or represent your patient population of interest? Different patient populations have different types of risk for different types of infections, so you want to make sure that you're looking at a similar type of patient population. You also want to make sure that your results for the benchmarking partner are current. You don't want to be looking at benchmarking against, published rates from 10 years ago, because that's not going to be probably what you want to be striving for. And then are your results based on, or are the results of the benchmarking organization, from a sufficiently large sample? So you want to make sure that they have enough data so that they're going to produce stable rates, particularly since you're going to be comparing yourself to this particular organization. And finally, you want to make sure that you select a benchmarking partner that's recognized as being credible. Now, what does that mean? Well, you have to find an organization that your stakeholder groups, in this case, for our example, we're working with a ward, medical surgical unit. And so you want to make sure that if you bring forward to them a potential benchmarking partner, that they're going to see this as a credible organization against which to benchmark, and that they will see that those results would be of value and valid. So as I mentioned earlier, I said that for our example, we were going to use the NHSN. And so the NHSN has just released a new report, just published, I think, within the last month. So this is a slide shot taken from that. And so the NHSN, just a little bit of background, was established in 2005. It combines three CDC surveillance systems. So the National Nosocomial Infection Surveillance System, which is referred to as NIST, that I'm sure many of you are familiar with. There's the Dialysis Surveillance Network and the National Surveillance for Healthcare Workers. And similar to NIST, facilities or organizations that participate in the NHSN, they voluntarily submit their data to the NHSN, all of their surveillance data, and this gets collated into a national database. And so a couple of the objectives of particular relevance to us from the NHSN standpoint is that the NHSN, as an objective, is they want to look at monitoring healthcare-associated infections over time. And the second thing, an important objective, and that we're going to use today and tap in today, is the objective of enabling interfacility and intrafacility comparison. And so interfacility means that we're looking at comparing different types of facilities or different organizations, but the NHSN also allows you to be able to compare different patient units, so even within your organization. So I'd like to point out that on this slide, you see, and I just want to talk about, the representativeness of the data from the NHSN. You can see that in the smaller table, it gives a breakdown of all of the participating facilities by the hospital type. And you can see that in total, there were 1,749 organizations or facilities that submitted data to the NHSN. And just because I forgot to mention it earlier, this data is from January 2006 all the way to December 2008. So this is for a 3-year period. And you can see here that the majority of those facilities that submitted data, 88.6%, were from general hospitals, including acute care, trauma, and teaching hospitals. In the table beside that, it also gives this table gives a breakdown of the NHSN participants by the hospital type in terms of their teaching programs, and also as well as in terms of bed size categories. So this helps you get a sense of how representative this this data is, and the results from the data. So on this page, or on this slide, is also another screenshot from the NHSN report. And here, this is the slide that provides the results for urinary catheter-associated UTIs. Now, before we start looking specifically at the actual rates, I'd like us to focus on the area in red that I've put in a box there. Remember, we were talking about earlier about the importance of making sure that we had our patient population of interest covered. So here we can see that the NHSN has the capacity, primarily because we're drawing from a very large sample size, the capacity to provide rates specifically for a medical surgical inpatient unit. And here we can also see that in terms of the number of units or the number of facilities that submitted data, there were 623 facilities submitting data for catheter-associated UTIs. They submitted in total 1,141 UTIs and with over 700,000 catheter days. So we can feel pretty confident that we're looking at a benchmark that has a very large sample size, comes from a diverse number of facilities. So now we get into the fun part. So now we're going to take a look at the actual rates that are published. So the rate that I circled in green, this is the pooled mean rate. So here they've published a report or a rate of 1.6 cautis per 1,000 catheter days. So the pooled mean rate, that means that they take all of the data from all 623 organizations and they put that all together, the total number of catheter-associated UTIs over the total number of your catheter days, and they come up with this rate. But what's nice is that in addition to providing you with the pooled rate, the NHSN also publishes the rates broken down by percentile. So here we can see if we look at the mid, and this is to, on the far side of, in the red box, you can see that if we look at the middle one, the 50th percentile is a rate of one UTI per 1,000 catheter days. And so essentially what this is, whereas the other one was the average, this is a similar type of thing, but more like the median. So how they calculate that is they rank all of the facilities, and then they put in their rates, and then they look at where is the 50th, where's the middle, and that's where we come up with our 50th percentile. So that means that 50% of the organizations have a rate that's higher than one, and 50% of the organizations have a rate that is lower than one. Now, if we look over, we see that, we see the rates also published for the 75th percentile. So here they have a rate of 2.5. So that means 75% of the facilities have a rate that's lower than 2.5, and 25% of facilities that submitted data have a rate that's higher than 2.5. Now, this is information that I'm going to show you how we're going to move forward, how you can take that and assess how we're doing with our example facility. So, what I've done here is I've taken the information from the NHSN report, and I applied it to our graph. And so the importance of doing that is that it makes it readily apparent, and communicates well what our performance is in relation to our benchmark. And so what we have here is our performance with the blue line. And then we have the red line, which is the NHSN 50th percentile rate. We have the mean in green, which was the pooled mean. And then we have the 75th percentile rate. So if we remember, we wanted to look at this to be able to assess whether, one, we our concerns needed, you know, were valid in terms of, you know, an increase in rate. And then this information can also be helpful in terms of trying to establish a target. So here we see that our rates have been consistently over both the 50th percentile and the NHSN mean, but we've also surpassed the 75th percentile. And so I think you could take this information back to the folks on your medical surgical ward and say, hey, you know, I think we really do have a problem here, and be able to communicate that nicely with a graph like this. So now that we know that we have an issue with our rates, that doesn't tell us how do we move forward to make improvements. And so this, now we're going to move to from process or from performance benchmarking to process benchmarking. And so the objective of process benchmarking is as Zahir mentioned earlier, is looking externally outside of ourselves, looking for the high performer, learning from them, what did they do, how did they do it, and trying to apply that to our setting so that we can experience similar success and reductions in our rates. So, for the purposes of today's presentation, I went online because I thought, well, you know, I mean, I should just try to do this myself for our example, our ward. And so I did a simple Google search, and I came across a great report by the St. Joseph Medical Center in Towson, Maryland. And this is a report that was published on the internet, but it came from a poster presentation done by an infection preventionist and her colleagues at this facility. Her name is Jackie Galuzzo, and if she's on the line, thank you. And they had presented a poster presentation at a recent Maryland Patient Safety Conference just in April of 2011. And so I looked at this and I thought, wow, this is a great report. It was very comprehensive. It provided all kinds of great information. And so essentially what you see here is the information that I gleaned from that report. So staff were required to sign a pledge to perform catheter insertion and maintenance. They had an extensive communication strategy to raise awareness and remind staff of a bundle. They shared their CAUTI rates with staff. They required staff to review aseptic procedure for catheter insertion and maintenance. They placed posters in strategic locations to remind staff. They also created a goal sheet, and so the goal sheet is your performance goal, so that it reminded staff of the unit of what their performance target was. Infection control also participated in daily rounds, and just because I failed to mention it earlier, this their particular unit of interest was a medical surgical intensive care unit. And so they did have these multidisciplinary daily rounds, and so infection control participated in those rounds to instill, you know, the practice of daily assessment of need for catheterization. And they also created a pocket guide for easy reference to the bundle. But as Zahir mentioned earlier, you know, you can get a lot of good information from reports, the published literature, but often what's missing, particularly when you want to apply that information, is the how-tos. How did they achieve that? How did they get staff to get on board? How can I, you know, apply this and make it work in my setting? So, again, for the purposes of today's presentation, I contacted Jackie. I sent her an email first, and I told her what it was that we were doing. And I sent her some questions. I had three questions specifically, so I emailed those questions to her, and I followed up with a telephone conversation. And I have to say, this is not a hard thing to do. People, you know, that are doing well and they've reported their results are flattered that someone has noticed what they've done. And they are very happy and willing to be able to share that information. So I had a great conversation with Jackie. And specifically, I wanted to know what did you do, in terms of making this work? What issues did you have in terms of getting people to get on board? And what recommendations would you make for taking this this kind of an initiative and applying it to a setting outside of the intensive care unit? Because her initiative, or their initiative, was specific to a medical surgical ICU. And our example is a medical surgical ward, so a different type of patient population. So was there something that, you know, that she could recommend that we do a little bit differently? So what she did suggest, and the key here was communication, that the key to their success was in, you know, raising the awareness, making sure that people had a clear understanding of what the performance target was, who the benchmark was, why they were doing it, how their rates, how they were performing over time in relation to their performance target, reminders of the initiative, that kind of thing. In terms of applying it to a setting outside of the intensive care unit, where we might not be doing daily rounds in the same way as we do as in an intensive care unit, she suggested, you know, trying to make sure that you created some kind of mechanism, and it might be a checklist or something else, where you would have a daily assessment of the patient's ongoing need for catheterization. So based on the information that we learned from our high performer, we're going to look at setting a performance target. So I've taken the information from the NHSN, I've taken the information from what we learned from Jackie and their success, and we're going to try to apply that to our setting. So here, what I've done is I've taken the same graph that we had before, and now I've applied a performance target. And I should say that this is not something you want to do by yourself. Me, as an epidemiologist, I do not want to say, here's your target. You want to make sure that you're working with the staff on the unit, and because they're the ones, it's their performance, you know, essentially, that's going to end up getting measured. And so you really need to make sure that you have their buy-in. So assuming that, you know, we sat down with the staff on the medical surgical unit, we shared with them that information, and we come up with a goal. And for the purposes of today, we're going to say that our goal is the NHSN 50th percentile. This was the same target that Jackie and her colleagues had used and had achieved considerable success with. And so we feel confident that we can achieve a similar type of success. We also feel pretty confident that we can develop an intervention that we can apply in our unit. Another thing on the graph that I've put on here is I've made a note of when we implemented our intervention. This is really important for ongoing communication, right? So you want to be able to, as you're moving forward, be able to demonstrate that this is where we implemented our intervention, and so hopefully we'll start to see reductions after that point and where we are in terms of our target. So we have been successful. So on this graph, what I've shown you is that we now have two additional quarters worth of data. Within the first quarter, we have reduced our rates quite significantly. And in the first quarter of 2011, we have now reached our target and actually have gone below our target. So one of the key things here that you'll want to be able to do is, one, I mean, you need to be communicating this to the staff on an ongoing basis. You want to take the time to celebrate your successes. And over time, you're going to continue to monitor. You're probably now going to be, since you've already done all of the work of comparing yourself to someone else, you'll be able to, you have your benchmark established, and you have your rates that you're continuing to monitor. You may also, at one point, you know, if you have sustained rates that are below your target, you may want to create a new target for yourself and reduce those rates even further. But you should also continue to look outside to your organization, to look at who are the people that are in, you know, doing really well, and what can I take and learn from them to apply that to my setting, to, you know, continuously drive performance. So in summary, performance benchmarking is a key component of a continuous improvement process with the goal of keeping on top of, you know, ever-improving practice. And to be successful, benchmarking should focus on learning about why something works well rather than focusing just on the what. So it really, you know, I think by, you know, calling up those individuals, doing a site visit, finding out how is it that they're actually achieving their success, that is sometimes, often, you know, more valuable information than exactly what it is that they did. I'd like to offer my sincerest thanks to Jackie Galuzzo from St. Joseph Medical Center in Towson, Maryland, for sharing with me her experience so that I could share that with you and demonstrate that this is really not a, you know, it doesn't have to be a difficult exercise. This slide shows our references that we used for this presentation. So this covers both the references for Zahir's portion and my portion. And now we open the floor for questions.
We do have time for questions. Some of you might have thought that Leslie was going to come up here and give you some rocket science about what it was that she did, but it truly was just a phone call. And I think that was the light bulb moment for a bunch of us was, we sit and we try and figure out how to do better, and we often forget that there's some easy ways to be able to work with lots of colleagues, not just necessarily in our city, but all across the world, to be able to get some of the information. With all the technology that we have now, there's great ways to be able to network at conferences like this and then be able to have colleagues that you can compare with or speak to about whether they could potentially be people that you want to compare with. So it wasn't anything rocket science. It truly was just a phone call and a conversation. But it was a light bulb for most of us, and we hope maybe a little bit of a light bulb for some of you. Any questions around performance measurement and benchmarking? So the question was, what do you do if you want to benchmark to something old?
You don't want to.
You have to. You don't have to.
You don't have to.
And I think Myrna just answered her question, and I think Leslie's gonna tell you. You don't have to. One of the things that I would suggest is if the data's old, then you might want to actually look at comparing against yourself. If there truly isn't anybody else out there that you can compare against, given the services, the population that you have, then you might be your own benchmark. It might really be working with your own group to figure out how can we do better, and comparing against yourself and continuing to try to find out if there are other organizations that are doing the same thing that you are, but you might actually be the leader.
Another thing I'd like to say is that although CINESP has experienced difficulties in posting their results, you could contact individuals that do participate in CINESP and obtain the more current rates. And so that's something that I do routinely. Our Vancouver Coastal Health does participate in CINESP, and I do share those rates. I call and get the rates myself, the most current rates, and I do share those with my colleagues. So, you know, if it's not, you know, readily available, it's a phone call away.
Just like we did with Jackie.
So, who would someone call?
Well, you could actually go to CINESP, or you could find out, you know, there's a lot of publications from CINESP, and you could find out from there who the authors are, their contact information, that kind of thing, and ask around.
As an example of that, there's some people have moved into the using a statistical process control charts or run charts. Mm-hmm. So several years ago, I was trying to figure out a way to be able to compare some of my data to the NIST data, and I was going to try and use a control chart related to trying to look at my performance and then be able to measure against something else. And it wasn't until Leslie just spoke that I realized I actually just looked up the reference, found Teresa Horan's name, looked it up in the APIC book, and called her and said, "You're the author on this publication, and I need to understand how it was that you got the calculations and that you did the work that you did." She was fabulous. And again, like Leslie said, she was more than happy to send me, she actually sent me a table that was populated with all the calculations related to the example that she had. And so all I needed to do was sort of, I was fairly adept with Excel, and so I was able to go through all of the cells and actually get a better understanding of where the numbers were coming from, where the calculations were coming from. The key, though, was I looked up the author and called mm-hmm. her and said, "Can you help me?" And most people in our field, if you call them up and say, "Can you help me?" they won't say no. And so take the opportunity to try and find people who you think that you might be similar to. We've talked about sort of comparing and doing it against one benchmark, but you could do this for a number of organizations, mm-hmm. Depending on what it was that you were doing. It may not be one organization that you want to compare against, because they may be doing really well with one thing and sucky in another. And so you try and find someone else that you can compare to. Grow your network, but it truly was just calling the authors. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for joining us. I think Myrna has a quick announcement for you. And then we'll let you head off to break a little bit early. Yeah.
Oh. We just want to thank Gojo again for sponsoring us with this teleclass.